welcome, everybody. Let's Talk Real Estate, your weekly BS with Barry Saywitz about the current commercial real estate market here in Southern California. As we take a no BS look at both sides of the issues driving this market today to find the best solutions going forward. With our man right in the middle, it's Barry Saywitz. Hey, Barry.
Hey, good morning, Paul, and good morning to all of our viewers and our listeners out there. It is Tuesday. We are back here again. We are talking more real estate. I am Barry Saywitz, president of the Saywitz Company and managing partner of Saywitz Properties, and I'm happy to be back here on a what I expect to be a nice sunny Tuesday. I hope our past the heavy rains we've had here in Southern California, really throughout the state, and we're on to springtime. And so I do want to do a shout out to all the winners and the nominees for the Oscars that happened this past weekend. Congratulations. And everybody else who is out there who's probably not listening to us, who's on spring break. We're moving forward with other stuff, looking forward to St. Paddy's Day, Easter, and all kinds of other fun stuff. So with all of that said, I want to welcome back our guest, Tom Grable, who is Division President of TriPoint Homes and also Chair of the California Building Association. Tom, thanks for coming back on the show again. You were here a couple of months ago, and we're happy to have you back.
Oh, thanks for having me back.
So last time you were here, we were talking about TriPoint Homes. We were talking about home building, which is sort of, I'm going to call it your day job. And then, but today I want to focus on your sort of alter ego and your other job as chair of the building, California Building Association, and what you do and what that organization is and how it really impacts not only building in California, but how that trickles down really to everybody at the end of the day.
Sure. The California Building Industry Association, or CBIA, as we call it, is a statewide organization, it's a trade association for home builders. Our makeup is really everybody that is involved in the process of providing housing in California. We represent between 80 and 90% of all the housing units that are built in our state, and we represent some of the largest land owners, land developers, as well as some of the biggest publicly traded home building companies, as well as the medium-sized and even small private home builders up and down our state.
And the people who rely on the California Building Industry Association are really all the trickle-down businesses, from contractors to architects to land planners to you name it, that go into building a house, right?
Yes.
Everybody along the way.
Yeah, all of our trade partners, as well as all of our design consultants, they're all part of our total organization.
And the organization as a whole, its function, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you can give us a better explanation, is really to act as an advocate on behalf of the home building industry and community in dealing with Sacramento and dealing with laws that would either prevent or promote the ability for home building going forward, true?
Yes. What I like to describe as a three-legged stool that's been expanded now to five legs, and that is that our association's involved in certainly first advocacy on our behalf, but also education and also business development opportunities. But the other two legs I add to that now is advocacy and more advocacy. So
yeah.
That is the primary purpose of what CBIA does.
And there are different divisions within the state and different geographical areas, from Northern California to LA to Orange County, you name it.
Right? Yes. Yeah. In fact, they're the regional organization is the Building Industry Association of Southern California that I had the privilege of being chair of in 2019 and 2020, and then also individual chapters underneath the region, which would include the BIA Orange County chapter.
Correct, which is right here in Irvine.
Yes.
And so I don't know where you go on the ladder posts and positions after you're done with doing what you're doing, other than, I don't know, we send you there as governor or something to try and make policy. But so this is a term position, and then when you're done, somebody else will take the reins.
Yes, yes. We have an executive committee, and the chair does rotate in and out of the executive committee on from our board. But the chair is generally a builder or land developer by charter. And so, we are kind of the, if you liken our industry to a train, we're the engines of the train.
Yeah.
So obviously we carry a lot of cargo along with us in order to do what we do. But in terms of being that tip of the spear and being involved in the issues that either make or break housing opportunities, yes, us builders are the ones that are at the leadership level for that.
And always important, but I got to believe in this economic environment of where we are today, one of the most critical points in time in terms of the building industry as a whole, coming out of COVID, all kinds of, I'm going to call some crazy, some not as crazy legislature, and really housing crisis in a general sense, however you want to define it, and builders trying to deal with the free market side of doing their own business and then navigate the challenges of what the laws are and what people throw at you.
And when people learn about what we actually have to go through just to build a home, they wonder, why do you do this?
Yeah, or how long it actually takes till something actually comes out of the ground.
Exactly. So, yeah, a lot of times to take up a new community proposal through what's called the entitlement to use process, or what we call entitlement, that can take years.
Yeah.
And where it can take twice as long to get a community approved as it does to actually build it.
Yeah. No, I have a couple of projects. I tell people I used to be like 6'2 when I started the project, and not anymore.
You and me both.
Yeah. So it happens. It happens. And so in terms of your role as far as dealing with Sacramento and dealing with the legislators that are up there, are there particular people that you're dealing with, or is it really a question of fighting each individual fight as it comes along?
You know, housing has such a broad a spectrum of issues associated with it. So what could be like a secondary or tertiary type of issue, it still affects housing. So for example, the Natural Resources Committee, you know, that's where a lot of environmental policy is. Environmental policy affects our business. The Insurance Committee, whether it's the State Senate or the State Assembly Insurance Committees, they right now that's front and center in the news, you know, in terms of property, the ability to get property insurance, especially in outlying areas that are close to wildland areas. So those committees affect what we do. But the housing committees of both the Senate and the Assembly, we regularly meet with the leadership of those committees, as well as leadership of each respective house of the state, both the Assembly and the Senate. But also, too, you mentioned something I want to clarify, and that is you talk about housing crisis. And that's something that occurred to us, that we don't have a housing crisis from the sense that if we had the ability to build homes, we would and could. We would be able to solve our supply chain issues that we've had of late, last several years, as well as the labor that's necessary to build houses. We can build homes. So in actuality, we don't have a housing crisis from the standpoint of builders not being able to build homes fast enough if they can. What we have instead is a housing policy crisis. And the housing policy crisis is something that's been over time, last 40 years, basically, as California has become more and more restrictive on the ability for builders to build, yeah, and to satisfy the demand.
And the layers and layers of requirements and restrictions
regulatory and
regulatory issues, it just makes it not only more difficult, but more costly,
yes,
to do it at the end of the day. And so on the one hand, it weeds out competition. On the other hand, it really restricts it. And so now you have COVID where nobody was building anything. And so, you know, the byproduct of that, it's all flows downstream, in my opinion, right? So you have housing prices that really didn't come down at all. And part of that is because you still have very limited supply available. Mm-hmm. And then you have people in Sacramento, the governor and others saying, well, we need to build more affordable housing, right? And we need to build more housing, period. Right. And then you're, yes, focused on the affordable housing, and then you're requiring individual cities by the mandate that you put together to have a target of a certain amount of affordable housing units within each city. And each city throughout the state has got a number from Sacramento, many of which are completely unrealistic from the mayors that we've had in here talking about it. At the same time, the goal is you got to try. Mm-hmm. Right. And then how does it go at the end of the day? If the builder can't, the city's not building it. So if the builder can't build it, or it doesn't pencil, or I can't find some land to be able to do it, then you don't get anywhere at the end of the day.
Right. And so there's a lot there to unpack, but I'll boil it down to two things that you raised. One is the what's called RHNA. That's R-H-N-A. It stands for Regional Housing Needs Assessment. So we just call it RHNA. But that is a basically a quota that is given to each city and county jurisdiction, saying this is what the number of housing units you need to provide for your fair share,
right,
of what, based upon what the needs are in your region. that's become more and more important, and Sacramento is being just absolutely more vigilant at promoting and pushing those RENA numbers onto cities. And it's really a combination of an effort to make cities build more homes or create the opportunities for more homes to be built in their jurisdictions, for one, because the NIMBYs, or the people who are, you know, the not in my backyard fighting against new development, have been very successful over all these years.
But now Sacramento hangs the carrot of, if you don't do this, I'm not going to give you your money. And so there you go.
It's a big carrot.
Right.
And an effective carrot. The other issue is that Sacramento and the legislature and the governor really are wanting to keep development within kind of the more or less the existing boundaries of the urban footprint and not extend into what's called the WUI areas. I'm using a lot of buzzwords here, but WUI is Wild Land Urban Interface, so WUI. So that's where the wildfire issue is. And when wildfires occur, they occur in the wildland areas and they affect housing that is in those areas. And I'll go back to that in a second. But then you raised affordable housing. Affordable housing is a very specific term. That really, affordable housing, when we're talking affordable housing as builders, we're referring to government subsidized housing. So these are nonprofit builders who are building with government grants. They're doing it with a lot of certain restrictions. And quite honestly, it's actually more costly to build an affordable housing unit than it is to build a market rate housing unit.
It's interesting.
So affordable housing is a term that's used, like I said, for
because I thought all housing in California was not affordable, as most people think.
Well, that's why we use the word attainable.
Right.
So attainable housing is on the market rate side. I mean, how are we priced where the first time buyer can actually afford an attainably priced market rate home? And those are two very different businesses. Now, the CBA represents builders in both of those categories. And so we're pro housing for all. And so we do have members that do specifically affordable housing, and we do advocate on their behalf as well. My company and most home builders that do the largest volume are market rate home builders trying to build attainably priced homes.
Right. And the fact of the matter is, we've had some of the mayors, i.e. Huntington Beach or San Clemente, that are coastal cities that really don't want subsidized housing and also don't want to go up vertically and don't have the capacity to do anything but that because they're land restricted.
And I understand the push and the pull. Does Huntington Beach, for example, want to look like Daytona Beach?
Yeah.
And with all high rise on the waterfront. And that goes back to what's the character of our city. And as a citizen of a city, you kind of want to have the character maintained of what attracted you there in the first place. We get that. The challenge on the other side is the push of, there's just more people coming in. California's an attractive place. People pay a premium to live here with them. I mean, all our sunshine doesn't come for free.
Right. And on top of it, you have a lot of tourists, and especially along the coastal areas, you have people renting Airbnb and short-term vacation rentals, which takes housing stock off the market.
Right.
And so then you're even more compressed with that.
Yes.
But, for me, I'm curious your thoughts. I mean, I'm a pragmatist, but I mean, I just say, look, if you took the layering off and allowed somebody to build something, the market would bear whatever the market bears.
Right.
And then secondly, you would be creating jobs. Mm-hmm. You would be creating new home opportunities for people. And a builder like TriPoint or others, you have the ability to get creative to sell somebody a home if you wanted to.
Yes.
And more so than just, hey, I'm trying to sell my individual house, right?
So I look at the numbers. So I've got a sheet here. I'll leave this with you. It shows what the building permit activity has been like over the last 70 years, or 69 years. We haven't included 2023 yet, but those numbers are coming in. Over the course of 70 years, since 1955, we've got, let me catch it in these terms. The governor challenged our state at the end of his first year, back in 2020, his state of the state, he challenged us to be able to build 3.5 million housing units. So, and he did it, he said, our goal is to do that over the course of 7 years. That's 500,000 units a year.
Right.
Our state has never done that before.
In 70 years.
In all those, yes. Never once has it even gotten close to that.
It's aggressive. It's kind of like having all electric cars in the next 10 years.
It gives you yes. They are wild, audacious goals. However, when you look at just the facts and look at what has happened over all these years, and then a short time later, the state housing and community development department came out and said, well, maybe it's not $3.5 million, maybe it's only $2.5 million. Divide that by 7 years.
Still a ridiculous.
It's still 367,000 and change units. We've never done that in our state's history. In 70 years, we've only had 2 years we've built over 300,000 units. And those years were 1986 and 1963. 1963, think about it, the percentage of housing units to population, at that time, the population was less than half what it was. So that even exacerbates the or demonstrates that issue even further. But then you start to look at, okay, so how many years did we go over 200,000? 22. So 24 become 22 years of 200,000 plus and 2 years of 300,000 plus, 24 years total out of 70 years that we've built over 200,000 units.
And you want to go 7 years in a row as the governor of even more than that.
And since he challenged the state to do that, we've built less than 500,000 units. Because
in totality.
In totality.
In how many years?
In the last 4 years.
So it's nothing.
Right.
Relatively speaking.
We continue to go backwards. So the supply of housing opportunities for people continues to become more constrained. So why are we surprised that prices continue to go up radically?
Yeah.
And so the effort to put affordable housing to countermand that is a noble goal, but does it actually do that? And the answer is clearly no. There's not enough housing units in total being built in our state to drive prices back or even stabilize prices.
And so I guess I'll ask the alternative question, because if you were pro-building and you were trying to spur this building, would you, instead of layering all these restrictions on builders, would you not provide tax incentives or an expedited process to make it easier to get the homes built as opposed to making it more difficult? I don't know.
Well, you would
call me silly.
Which, of course, that is not happening.
And, yeah.
At the state level, we continue to having to advocate for more housing opportunities, but we're still, you know, batting back just a lot of legislation that works counter to that. We have a regular hit list that comes out through the course of the legislative, I call it the legislative season, because it's kind of like a season. You have a start and an end to the legislative session. And in the course of that, we're monitoring where bills are going through committee, you know, as they're introduced. Last year, we had almost 300 bills that were introduced that had an influence toward housing or against housing. What we call housing creators or housing killers.
Yeah.
But there are 300 bills that were
in 1 year,
written in 1 year, plus or minus. The vast majority of those were housing killers. They were not housing creators, and so a lot of them seemingly may not have been directed to housing, but had a housing impact. Insurance being one of those, you know, wildfire legislation, you know, while it seems like the right thing to do, is it? And when you look at the facts, and I'll go into a little bit more depth on that issue.
And I got one more question for you, but in terms of the ability to build new housing in urban areas, right? If the slant from the state, if you will, is not to go out into the far out suburban areas, where you're not land restricted, but you have other issues, and you're going to try and stick in, I'm just going to pick on San Francisco and Los Angeles because they're the two biggest urban areas with the two biggest struggles, with the two highest crime rates, super expensive, and then you hear stories and you see on the news the high rise in downtown LA that's graffitied all over the place and the crime rate and people don't want to be there and it kills the whole neighborhood and the whole vibe of things. How does somebody get a project going, and why would they even want to do it, and how does it even pencil at the end of the day?
Well, the first thing to understand about infill development is you're talking about properties that generally have something on them already. So in a lot of cases, we're going in and buying a property and we're tearing down something, and at Tri Point and other builders, we do that. We've you know, shopping centers that are no longer relevant,
office complex,
offices, sure, even schools.
Yeah,
we've had schools that were like, example, Huntington Beach had one elementary school per square mile, and then all the kids all grew up. Now they don't have the need. The school districts don't have the need for that many elementary schools in that city, and never will, even with infill development, even if they satisfy the arena numbers.
So, which they won't.
But. Right. But so when you look at the where the opportunities are to build in infill, they're selective. They're far between. It's not something you can just go and buy 10 homes, tear them down, and build 20 homes in their place. It's very difficult to do that.
And you're also looking at really smaller developments that are not going to move the needle in terms of the overall desire to create substantial additional housing.
Right.
Right. I mean, where you're able to get bigger developments is where you have larger plots of land, which then gets back to, you know, where does that go?
No. And we like infill housing. It is difficult to get out of the ground. But once you do get it going, usually you're building an area that is starved for housing. So there is demand in the area. You just have to make sure that you're designing the right product, the right density, and the right price in order for that to happen. But infill generally does have a lot of pent-up demand. Yeah. But you need balance. You need to balance the infill development with the greenfield development. You're not going to be able to accomplish what we as a state need to accomplish to provide some stability with our attainable or lack of attainable price points, lack of affordability, unless we're building more housing to fill the need for the demand. And until we do that, we're going to still have a challenge in our state to drive down affordability.
And so why wouldn't the governor or the state want people to build further out? I mean, I understand, yeah, so there's a risk of fire and there's a risk of damaging wildlife and the environmental issues. Is that, that's really it? Those lobbyists have a stronghold on the folks in Sacramento?
Yes, and the environmental lobby is very, very powerful. They have a great deal of influence. And I'm an environmentalist too. I mean, I want us to preserve the environments that are really, truly important to us and should be enjoyed by all. However, there is the notion that if we just stop housing of all kinds and cause people to go away, or in other words, go elsewhere, go to other states, that it will further solidify our environmental the environmental agenda of the environmental lobby. The problem is people are still coming here, and so what you're doing is you're driving out the middle class, and you're making a situation where only the very wealthy can afford. And then you have everybody else, and then you wonder why we have some of the societal issues that we do, especially in the more urban environments. But the other thing too about our state is most people don't realize that when you look at what is actually built on the land of our state, if you took the total number of concrete that was and pavement and buildings and even private yards, and not count that as open space, 6.8% of our state is built upon.
Right.
That's it.
Right. You don't realize that. I mean, you drive around Los Angeles, you'd be like, oh my gosh, or you fly over in a plane, you'd be like, there's no trees. I don't see a park, right? It's all buildings, as opposed to you fly over other parts of the country and you see lots of lakes and green and forest and things like that. But the difference is you're only flying over the urban area, right? You're not flying inland in terms of the state, and you really don't have to go that far east to get to the point where it's really not that developed.
Yes. So the challenge is providing opportunities where you're at least providing people with the ability to get into a home, whether it's a for sale home or even a rental home. Even looking at what rental prices have done of late as well. But you need to have both the infill opportunities. Like
you need it all, right? I mean, you cannot solve the problem with just affordable housing or state-funded housing or assisted housing. I mean,
right.
You need all classes, I think,
exactly.
At the end of the day. And it's interesting because I look at it and I say, well, if there's movement from the coast because it's just too expensive to be at the coast, then I go further east. And then what you've seen happen is places like the Inland Empire, places like the Coachella Valley, places like Lancaster and Palmdale have all benefited from that in the sense of continued growth. And then you have people migrating from more expensive areas going, hey, this is actually pretty cheap, right? Mm-hmm. And then what does is it just runs up the prices in those areas and they become more expensive.
And the cycle continues.
Yes. So the question then is, what's the new area where it is more affordable to live and to build? And if there isn't that next area, then you've choked it.
Right.
Right. I mean, you just choked it off. I mean, so whether that, I don't know where it is, whether that's a Bakersfield or whether that's a Visalia or, you know, other areas that have seen some amount of growth but still have lots of land.
There have been proposals. There's one in particular up in the northern part of the Central Valley of building an entire city from the ground up.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, I'm going to pull back and refer to a big master plan up Five Point Communities has up in Valencia. It took 20 years for that community to pull its first building permit.
Really?
In that same 20-year period, Dubai was built.
Right.
Now housing 3.5 million people in some of the highest technology known to man in a living environment.
Yeah, and that same story gets replicated in other areas as well. Let's shift gears for a second. I want to talk insurance because that's also a choker as far as I'm concerned, at least at the moment. And I am living, I'm going to call it the nightmare, which is that people's property insurance are either going up or getting canceled and companies are pulling out. How does that affect what you're dealing with in terms of trying to build homes? Certainly a new home has new technology, less issues than an older home that might have more risk, but still an issue nonetheless.
Well, interestingly enough, CBIA was the tip of the spear, and it continues to be the tip of the spear on that issue. That was first raised at CBIA 2.5 years ago, and now it's in the headlines. We were starting to see the creep of insurance rates for new development, especially the developments that are on the outer edges of our urban footprint.
Right.
They're closer to the wildland areas. And they were seeing huge spikes of increases in premiums, especially for attached homes, so townhomes, condominiums, and so forth. They were experiencing just triple digit and even quadruple digit increases.
And for those folks out there that aren't aware, right, the attached home, one catches fire, it'll just spread very quickly.
Yes, so it's
that's
a building.
The risk, right?
Yes, so the risk. Yeah, the risk is the entire building. So we started talking directly with the insurance commissioner and his office, as well as the governor's office and the legislature, about this challenge that what's coming down the pike. And sure enough, it happened. Now you start to see with the inability of insurance companies to adjust their rates to what their actual losses are, they're exiting our state.
Yeah, and or they're just pulling back dramatically, or I mean, for real world examples, like I used to have a lot of insurance policies with State Farm. They just woke up one day and said, hey, we had a bunch of losses, we're done. And State Farm over the years had either cut off the spigot and then they'd come back and then they'd go, and they're not coming back anytime soon. We'll see how it goes. But I talked to my State Farm guy and he just said, look, you're screwed, right? I mean, for lack, I'm just paraphrasing. I actually think that's what he said, is you're screwed. But you have other large companies, Mercury and Liberty and others, that have just said, look, I can't take it, right? And we've had lots of losses. We've had lots of natural weather events that have caused damage. And then you have the going forward risk, right? And so now, in a newer building, you don't have the issues of the electrical and the plumbing and the roof and what have you. But we're hearing stories that if a building or a property, you know, has an older roof, you're just going to get declined.
Yes, and it's happening to people who've been in their home for, you know, 20, 30 plus years that aren't necessarily up against a wildland area. They're just in the area. I'm going to actually switch gears a little bit and come back to that and talk about housing on the outlying areas. You know, wildfire is a and not to seem trite, but it is a hot issue.
Yeah.
Especially when you're talking about the catastrophic losses that we've seen in recent years, whole towns being leveled, Paradise and Greenville and places like that. Tragic. However, in 2008, the state, as they continually update their building codes and fire codes, in 2008 there was an update that was very extremely substantial. So that homes that were built after that code cycle was adopted, which basically is homes built from 2010 onward, those homes are among the most fire-hardened structures that we've ever built, short of the pyramids.
Right, right.
The homes that we're building today up against those fire-prone areas are extremely fire-hardened. We use very specific construction techniques to insulate those homes from fire risk, to the point where we're basically, when we're building a new community on the edge of a town, we're building a wall for the older homes in that town. So, for example, if Paradise had a new subdivision on its eastern flank,
it would have blocked it. It wouldn't have just run right through the whole town.
Or certainly would have protected a good number of structures that otherwise were lost.
Right.
So. You know, we're able to claim the mantle. We're the wall of the city. You want us to be building in those areas to provide that protection. And we've got data and facts and figures that absolutely support that. But again, those are facts.
But so if I'm Sacramento and I don't want you to build out there because there's a risk or there's the environmental issue, aren't I just back to I'm building in the urban areas and I've got to go vertical?
Well, again, but you really need for us to be building up against and kind of providing that barrier for the older housing stock in those communities. Yeah. Because of our ability to withstand, and this has been proven. I mean, when we had the fires here in Orange County, was it 5 years ago in Irvine?
Right, right.
Those fires went right up to the back fences of new housing. Not one structure was lost, not one. Not one actually had any substantial fire damage.
But when you talk about the insurance company, they don't care because if they have to insure the claim, then they're saying, hey, it's risk.
Yes.
But now the insurance company says, and they won't say it, but I think if I can read between the lines, you're too close to the ocean, so you could get hit with a tsunami. You're too close to the forest, you could burn down. You're near a fault, you could have an earthquake, right? You have an older property, and so there's more risk of a water leak or other damage or roof leak or anything. And so now I've gotten to the point, if I'm the insurance company, I put my hat on for a second, is I've got a laundry list of reasons why I wouldn't do it. And I'm not even that excited to generate new business.
Well, and you're not allowed to adjust your rates commiserate with your losses. That's something that the insurance...
I just say no, right?
Well, that's what's happened for all these years. And now the insurance commissioner, Ricardo Lara, it's basically this issue that's been, you know, a culmination of years of neglect has now landed in his lap. And it's not an easy issue to solve. I mean, we've got, you know, we're meeting with him. I've met with him personally a number of times and explained what is happening to our new home buyers. There are communities where we're building attainably priced townhome product that people can't afford the HOA dues because the fire insurance is $1,200 a month,
right,
just for the insurance.
That's crazy.
So that those are the kinds of things that are affecting also affordability and attainability of housing.
So we've only got a couple of minutes left. What are the hot buttons for the rest of the year for 2024 relating to your world in the Building Industry Association?
Well, one of our big pushes for this year is a school bond on the November ballot.
Yeah.
There is a need to build new schools in our state. I mentioned earlier that in some of the older cities, the need for schools has become a lot less there. But in the areas that we are building, especially places like here in Orange County and the Inland Empire and up in LA County and places like Santa Clarita and such, there is need to build new schools, but there's no money to do it. And so
the state's going to float. Well, first we have an election to decide if we'll do it. And then if it passes, the state would float the bonds,
yes,
which would fund the development.
Exactly.
Good for everybody.
Exactly.
And that proposition is which one? Does that have a number yet? Or
not yet. No, no. It's not till November. So
right. So for those people out there, keep an eye on it, right? A, make sure you vote. Make your vote count. And then C, I think you should vote for the school bond thing. It's a good thing for everybody.
Yes.
And so if people want to find out more information about the California Building Industry Association, what's the website? Where would they go?
So CBIA.com and also here locally, BISC.com for local events. But we encourage, you know, anybody and everybody to be involved. We engage with a variety of different kinds of partners. The realtors are a frequent partner of ours, California Chamber of Commerce. So we have a lot of coalition partners. And we do partner even with people that we don't always agree and see eye to eye with, such as labor unions and environmentalists. But if there's something that is good for all parties, then we're gonna build coalitions wherever where the need is.
Yeah, and I would say for young folks or people who just want to get more involved in the real estate industry as a whole, I know that the California Building Industry Association, you guys have all kinds of committees and
yes,
actions and things like that. So if people want to get involved, I would say check it out. It's a good place to become more knowledgeable and make a difference. And for you, Tom, I appreciate you coming back on the show and sharing your thoughts with us. We could go all day. And wish you and all the folks around you, both at TriPoint and at the California Industry Association, continued success and keep up the good fight on behalf of all of us. We really appreciate all your efforts.
Well, thanks again for having me, and we certainly will keep up the fight.
So, yeah, so we'll let everybody get on with their day. I am Barry Sawitz, president of the Sawitz Company. I want to thank everybody for tuning in and listening in again. Thanks to all the folks here at OC Talk Radio for making the show happen. If it's Tuesday, we are here talking real estate. We'll be back again next week. We'll see you soon on Let's Talk Real Estate.
there you have it. You've been listening to Let's Talk Real Estate, your weekly BS with Barry Saywitz about the current state of the real commercial real estate market right here in Southern California. On Orange County's only community radio station, OC Talk Radio, streaming live from our studio here at the University of California Irvine's Beal Applied Innovation Center.